Let's move along here. Our next witness is Dr. John Goffman, Professor Emeritus, Medical Physics, UC Berkeley.
Dr. Goffman. Pleasure to be here. First of all, I'm going to disagree sharply with what John Heslip said. The number he quoted you of 1 in 100,000 based upon 100 millirems is a number that comes from the nuclear mafia, and as such should be believed for that. The correct number, in my opinion, for 100 millirems is 1 in 3,000. I'll come back to that. Based upon health considerations alone, I would like to tell this committee why nuclear power is illegal and grossly immoral, and why the health cover-up, which is continuing through tonight, makes the Watergate cover-up look like very small potatoes indeed. Peter Bradford, one of the most recently appointed commissioners to the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, gave a talk recently, and he said, in a few words, that which summarizes the history of all aspects of health and safety of nuclear energy. Peter Bradford said, the first casualty of atomic energy was the truth. That says it all. Now, many people wonder why it is that experts disagree and why some people may be for or against nuclear power and why they don't get the same answer. First of all, I can explain to you my position. I am anti-nuclear. I think every plant in this country ought to be shut down, and I think another one should never be built. They should never have been built in the first place. And I'm proud to be anti-nuclear. It's not fashionable. You're supposed to say, let's wait until we make it safe, which is pure rot. I'm anti-nuclear because I know enough about this problem to know that it's never going to be safe, that we're going to pay a high price, and that it's moral depravity of the first sort, worst sort, to not only ruin our genes in this generation and pass the genetic deterioration on to our offspring, but to leave a contaminated earth.
Senator Campbell. We're going to allow the witnesses to make their statements.
Oh, I know. I just want to know who he is. I'm sorry.
I've introduced him twice. He's Dr. John Goffman, Professor Emeritus, Medical Physics, UC Berkeley.
Goffman. Excuse me. Thank you. That's all.
We are not only deteriorating our genes right now from the nuclear power industry in place, and I can come back to that, but by spreading nuclear waste around the biosphere, we are guaranteeing that our offspring will have further deterioration. No lower form of human behavior has yet been conceived. Now, I'm the co-discoverer of uranium-233. If you follow the nuclear scene at all, you'll know that President Carter says the hope for the future of nuclear breeders is uranium-233. I have everything to gain in fame if my discovery of the fissionability of U-233 becomes a power source. And I hope that my discovery is shelved and never used, because the health impacts will be very, very intolerable. Now, you wonder why so many think-alikes exist among the experts. And the answer is simple. You don't survive as an expert with a salary check unless you think alike. Anyone that comes out with anything that disagrees with established policy soon doesn't have a salary. And the rest of the people working within the nuclear establishment know that happens to experts who disagree with established policy, so they simply don't talk. Now, I don't get this from speculation. I get it from direct experience, and I think your committee needs to hear this more than some of the details, though I will treat the Harrisburg numbers for you. In 1969, after 6 years of having been appointed by the Atomic Energy Commission to head a new division at the Livermore Laboratory, and I cut down some of my teaching during that period, Dr. Arthur Tamplin and I concluded that the so-called safe dose for the population was an absolute fraud, that natural background, that medical radiation, and the so-called safe dose of radiation are simply legalized permits to commit murder. Our estimates were that if everybody got the then allowed safe dose for the public, we would have 32,000 cancer deaths extra per year. The Atomic Energy Commission went wild, and the members of the Atomic Energy Commission vied with each other as to who could say that we were wrong by the largest factor. Some said we were wrong by 100-fold. Some said we were wrong by 1,000-fold. And some very, very brave ones said we were wrong by 10,000-fold. It turns out our estimate was too low. The true risk is even greater than we said. But you realize the Atomic Energy Commission no longer exists. And the reason it doesn't exist is their credibility sank so far below zero on the health effects problem and on the safety of emergency core cooling systems that the government realized that the only thing they could do is at least destroy the name AEC. The same hats were put on other people and put into new agencies, and we have only to wait for death to help us get rid of those people who think as the AEC did. And so I don't look for much better now from the Department of Energy or the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, though I'm terribly encouraged by Peter Bradford and encouraged by the health director and health standards of the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, Dr. Robert Minogue, and his colleague, Dr. Carl Galler, who have said, Senator Campbell, the myth that there is a safe threshold or tolerance or permissible amount of radiation is a myth and nothing else. And I'll quote his exact words, by God, there ain't no such thing. Now, you have to know what happens to people who object to the poisoning of Americans with radiation. I testified before Senator Muskie in 1969 to present these numbers. I'd given it as a very straightforward scientific paper a few weeks before for the engineers. I was called in that afternoon by Representative Chet Holifield, then chairman of the Joint Committee on Atomic Energy, called Dr. Tamplin and me in. And he ranted at us and said, I've been told by the Atomic Energy Commission that 100 times this dose would have no effect. I said, you've been misinformed. And then he turned to me and he said, listen, there have been other people who've tried to cross the Atomic Energy Commission before. We got them and we'll get you. Next, shortly thereafter, Dr. Michael May of the Livermore Laboratory said the AEC wanted to be sure to see every paper that we put out in advance so they could cope with the publicity aspects. I said, I wouldn't tolerate censorship. He said, Jack, I wouldn't consider censorship. The first paper was one of Dr. Tamplin's for the American Association for the Advancement of Sciences. I gave the paper to Michael May, and it came back, and what was left were a few prepositions and a few conjunctions, and that was all. And Dr. Tamplin was told if he wanted to give his paper in the unaltered form, he could pay his own way, not identify himself as a member of the Livermore Lab, and pay for his own travel and secretarial help in typing. I told Michael May if he did that, I would write to the American Association for the Advancement of Sciences and have them read a letter from me that the Livermore Laboratory was a laboratory of scientific prostitution and that I regretted that Dr. Tamplin couldn't come. That frightened Dr. May, and he backed off and Tamplin got to give his talk. The harassment continued. Dr. Tamplin lost 12 of his 13 people. He was a fair-haired boy until he found that radiation was harmful. This goes on over and over, and it's going on today. A little later, Dr. Tamplin was chosen by the American Cancer Society to come and lecture to an annual meeting they hold for press and media on the most important advances in cancer research. Ordinarily, a brass band would have sent Dr. Tamplin off to the cancer meeting. Instead, Mr. William Harford, the business manager of the laboratory, docked Dr. Tamplin's pay for 4 days. And I looked at the docking, and I said, Bill, you can act like an absolute ass if you want to, but you can't dock Tamplin for Saturday and Sunday because we don't work Saturday and Sunday. And he had to give him back those 2 days. The fear of these individuals of in any way interfering with the establishment is something to behold. I brought all 150 people in my division at Livermore to that laboratory. And they were in and out of my office, major scientists, almost every day with personal problems, scientific things they wanted to discuss. The moment we criticized the standards, nobody dared walk into my office. They were frightened. A couple of scientists, about 6:30 at night when no one is around, individually walked in and said, "I agree with what you're saying." And I said, "Well, why don't you help us? We've got a lot of work to do on this." And they said, "Look, Jack, you've got a lot of prestige as a scientist. They can't do anything to you, but I've got a wife and two children, and I've just put a down payment on a house, and they'll slice my throat." That explains to you why so many experts are on the pro-nuclear side. They get their salary check from it, and they're frightened. There's never been any evidence whatsoever of a safe amount of radiation. That is simply a fabrication for the convenience of the nuclear industry. And by the way, I have no compunctions about saying medicine is very guilty of killing people. And I want you to know, Senator Campbell, that that dose of 100 millirems per year that we're getting from natural is causing approximately 20,000 to 40,000 fatalities in the United States from cancer and leukemia. I don't know of a planet you can go to where there isn't any radiation, and we don't have the ships to get there. So we live with that as part of our 400,000 cancer deaths per year. Furthermore, it is true that if you move up to Denver, you are going to have twice the cancer rate from natural radiation. And it is further true that medical radiation, 100 millirems is 100 millirems, and it doesn't matter whether it comes from an X-ray machine or anything else. Now, I don't know where anybody got the idea that the nuclear industry is legal, because we have a constitution in the United States, and that constitution says that you shall not take away life without due process of law. The right to life is a natural right of humans. It has never been given to the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, to the Department of Energy, or to any other commission to take away. And so that any standards that have been set of permissible doses, tolerable doses, allowable doses, are simply legalized permits to commit random murder upon the population. There is no other way to describe it. This is right now in the federal court. I've testified in that case. There's a case to shut down the entire nuclear industry and abolish the Nuclear Regulatory Commission except for the best cleanup of what mess they have already made. That case is known as Honecker versus Hendry. At the district court level, the judge declared that he did not have jurisdiction. There's been much evidence put on the record already. There's a book out called Shutdown, which describes the testimony. It's moved up into the appeals court. Now, I truly don't believe there's a judge on the federal bench courageous enough to do what he should do and uphold the Constitution, which says you cannot take away people's life without due process of law. But the cover-up is breaking. And in contrast to your statement, Senator, that we hope that there won't be the anger, I hope there is a great deal of anger among the American people about the way they have been treated, about the fact that they are being made guinea pigs in the most monstrous experiment, an experiment of containment. One burp at Harrisburg upsets thousands and thousands of days of normal operations. And it is impossible to believe that the required degree of containment of nuclear wastes at all steps along the way, either with Harrisburg-type accidents, little spills, big spills, is ever going to approach the required degree of containment. And that required degree of containment is to be good to one part in 100,000. And if we don't achieve that in the nuclear industry, we are going to have a cancer and leukemia epidemic and genetic injuries that will move public health back 100 years at least in terms of the effect on our population. Now, I said the cover-up continues until today. You know the old saying that if there is a bearer of bad tidings and you don't like the bad tidings, the thing to do is to get rid of the bearer. And that's just what's done. Recently, Dr. Alice Stewart, George Neal and Dr. Thomas Mancuso did a study of the workers at the Hanford nuclear plant and concluded that cancer was being produced in the workers at the so-called safe or tolerance dose for the workers. We, of course, expected that would be the case because there was no reason to believe there is any safe dose. There never has been any evidence for a threshold. That's pure nonsense and rot, as I say, at the convenience of the industry. Their publication came out, and guess what the Department of Energy did? They took away Dr. Mancuso's funds. Now, I could have those data, the prime data, not his analysis of them, but the prime data to do my own research study. And he immediately agreed to give them to me. So I have all the computer printouts of those data myself. And I spent about 9 months analyzing the data. I recently sent my conclusions to the journal Health Physics, and it's been accepted for publication. And I confirm that Dr. Mancuso, Stewart, and Neal are correct, that cancer is being produced in the workers at the safe dose. The workers are being lied to regularly by Pacific Gas and Electric. I know that directly from participating in hearings where Pacific Gas and Electric lied in my presence about the workers' doses. And I find that the numbers are just about the numbers that Dr. Mancuso, Stewart, and Neal got. I disagree on some secondary issues, but I want to point out, here is a man that devoted from 1964 to 1978, I have never in my life, and I've done an awful lot of scientific research in 32 years, I have never seen a better set of data than he accumulated on the Hanford workers. And to have Dr. James Liverman of the Department of Energy insult the American public by taking Mancuso's funds away is simply the latest in the scandals of the nuclear mafia, and I certainly hope people become angry. Just the opposite of your statement about anger. Now, let's talk about Harrisburg. On Wednesday of last week, the first evidence came out that something had happened. The first thing that occurred to me was, what about the women and children there? Because in my researches on this problem, I have found that the infant in utero is approximately 30 to 50 times as sensitive as a 25-year-old to the cancer leukemia effect of X-rays or any other nuclear radiation. The child at 0 to 5 years of age is approximately 15 to 20 times as sensitive as a 25-year-old. So if there were any radiation releases to the area, I wanted to know if they were such that we ought to get the children and pregnant women out of Harrisburg. I attempted to get information from the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. I got nothing. I attempted other ways. I worked with Bill Schechner of KPIX, where he was on the phone for 6 hours trying to get information, and we could get no information on the doses to people in the Harrisburg area, that whole region around Three Mile Island. And Bill Schechner said to me, John, can you believe that they didn't have monitors in place in that whole region before an accident so they would be able to know in the event of an accident what people in the various populated centers were getting? I said, of course it's impossible, Bill. They had the monitors there. They're just not giving us the numbers. Friday night, Dr. Harold Denton got on the air and started to waffle around about the dose that was being given to Harrisburg, and he talked about one monitor here and an airplane there, and I began to wonder if they had those numbers. Finally, on Monday, I got in touch with the House Commerce Committee, and I asked them, what are you getting in the way of numbers from Harrisburg? And they said, powerfully little, we'll mail you everything we've got. I have those in my briefcase in your office, and they are a scandalous disgrace of the first order. There were no monitors in place. They have just a few scattered readings. They'd move an airplane around and take a reading every once in a while. So an intelligent decision on what to do about women and children could hardly be made. This is all if there isn't a massive increase in the accident, which is still possible. I don't have any confidence that they really know what they're doing anyway in the Harrisburg area, and I don't think there's any reason for any confidence. Now,
That they didn't have monitors in place is so unbelievable that it's just amazing, but that is the truth. I understand by Sunday a whole slew of monitors were flown in, so that now that the worst part of the episode is over, when the people receive the maximum part of their dose, unless the accident goes further, we're not going to know what the number of fatal cancers is that has been induced. Now, of course, the nuclear industry operates on this principle. There are no deaths unless somebody who is vertical at this moment, 5 minutes later, assumes the horizontal position and is no longer breathing. That is their idea of death. Otherwise, they have nuclear double talk. It's called a latent health effect. Isn't that a lovely thing, a latent health effect? It sounds like the sort of thing everybody ought to have. Well, latent health effects are murder, cancer, deaths. What these people need is to work in a cancer hospital or take care of some people the last 6 months of their life. They ought to take care of some leukemia victims and children. That would give them a little pause when they start talking about numbers of latent health effects. But these people, I told you, are morally depraved. Now, Dr. Denton said by Friday night they had, if you multiply the key number you want, and I can give it to you very simply, and Senator Watson, it doesn't matter if you get the radiation rapidly or slowly. I disagree totally with Dr. Heslop on this. You just add the total up. 100 millirems is 100 millirems for cancer and leukemia purposes. The key number you really want is to multiply the number of people by the number of rems. And what we call then is that is the man rems. That's the number. And the reason for that is this. If you want to know how many fatalities you've induced, what you need to know, it's the same effect if I give 300 people one rem, or 150 people two rems, or 75 people four rems, or 3,000 people a tenth of a rem. You multiply the two numbers together, the rems and the people, and you get man rems. Dr. Denton announced on Friday night from their fragmentary measurements, and those may be 10 or 100 times too low for all I know. I do not know because nobody did the job that I cannot believe they were not prepared to do, but they weren't. And I wonder tonight how many monitors are in Sacramento.
We're going to find out.
We'll find out.
We're going to have to.
I imagine somebody got off his duff and got some in here if they didn't have them here before last Wednesday. You know, they're very quick at learning that sort of thing. And then they'll say, why, we've had them here all the time. Dr. Denton's number was 1,000 man rems by Friday night. It is my statement, and I have extensive scientific evidence to back it, that I disagree with the UNSCAR nuclear mafia answer that Dr. Heslop quoted, and that I say for every 300 man rems for people of an average age of 25 years of age, you guarantee a death warrant from one case of cancer or leukemia. It's much less than it takes for children, much more for people at 60. But 300 is the number for an average population of 25 years of age. So you take the 1,000 that Dr. Denton said, divide it by 300, and that's 3.3. Call it three deaths at least were guaranteed by Friday night. Today, at some hearings in Washington, the new number is 1,800 man rems. So if you divide that by 300, it's six people have been given their passport to eternity from the Harrisburg episode. They won't be dead right away. It'll be between 2 and 25 years. And whether or not you can see which ones they are has nothing to do with it. We know these numbers, and they're not just statistical probabilities. They're living and breathing humans like all of you sitting up there who are going to die a miserable death because of this industry. Whether that 1,800 man rems should be multiplied by 10 or 100-fold, we'll never know. It is continuing, Senator Watson. That was one of your questions. The releases are continuing. I don't know if they're as high as they were last Wednesday and Thursday, but as they continue, the people are accumulating more, and my six will become bigger. Remember, that's fragmentary monitoring. Whether my six deaths should be 60 or 600, I do not know. That's without a major further into the accident. Now I'd like to say something more. The Pacific Gas and Electric Company wants to put online two reactors at Diablo Canyon. There's one remarkable thing about the Pacific Gas and Electric Company. If you wanted to know how to find earthquake faults in California, you ask where is Pacific Gas and Electric Company planning its next plant. That's the best way, far better than any geologist. All the geologists do is come in and confirm it after Pacific Gas and Electric Company has chosen the site. They've chosen Bodega, they've chosen Humboldt, they're shut down at Humboldt for seismic reasons, and I think you all know the story about Diablo Canyon. I think Governor Brown has had a singularly good position on nuclear power. He has said that he wants this information on Rancho Seco. I would like to see Governor Brown call for never opening the Diablo Canyon reactors. But more than that, whether you in the Senate and the Assembly of the California Legislature act, or whether the governor acts, I certainly hope 10 to 15 million Californians let PG&E know in no uncertain terms that there are ways that they can deal with PG&E economically if they persist in opening these two monstrous plants at Diablo Canyon. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Let's move along if we can. Senator Watson and then Assemblyman Levine.
Yeah. Dr. Goffman, you mentioned the required degree of containment, and I did not hear what that was. Could you comment on that briefly?
That relates to, you know, all aspects of the whole fuel cycle, building a reactor, operating a reactor, taking the fuel rods out, handling them, if you do or don't separate out the plutonium for further use, finally getting it to some ultimate burial place. Lots of people talk about the importance of the burial of the radioactive waste. That's not where the problem is. It's all those losses on the way to the bank. That's what counts. I have gone through that, and I've figured out that for a fully developed nuclear industry, unless you can contain that 99.999% perfectly, you're going to have trouble. You're going to have a cancer and leukemia epidemic that'll make our current cancer and leukemia look small. One part in 100,000 you can't afford to lose at all steps along the way.
Maybe I'm not hearing the answer the way I think I should.
Please ask it again.
Yeah. What is the required degree of containment?
I'm saying that if you lose 1/100,000th of the radioactivity you make, you're going to have a disaster. And that's what I call the required degree of containment. It's got to be better than that if you want to avert a disaster. It's not a legal requirement. The legal requirement is anything they ever do, because all they have to do whenever something goes wrong, they apply to the regulatory bodies for what you know these terms, they call apply for a variance, and they get it, which means they can give you any dose they damn please.
Assemblyman Levine.
Dr. Goffman, I have three areas of inquiry. The first, I think, is a follow-up to Senator Watson's questions. With regard to the nuclear plants that are currently operational in California, is the level of radiation that the workers experience in those plants, in your opinion, similar to that the workers would have experienced in the Hanford plant? That's question number one.
I think they're getting much more in the nuclear plants than they got in the Hanford plants.
Why would that be?
Partly it's the nature of the jobs they have to do versus the average person at Hanford. You know, some of the people at Hanford are security guards that don't walk anywhere near a radiation area. I'm including secretaries, business people, when I talk about the average dose at Hanford. These are workers. I attended a hearing of a PG&E arbitration thing, and I saw a list of the exposures, and they are devastatingly high. They have a lot of workers getting right up to the legal tolerance, and that legal tolerance is such that if those workers work there for 8 years at that level, they will double their cancer risk.
What about...
Incidentally, the story about there haven't been any deaths. The nuclear industry's been killing people every day for years in the form of cancer and leukemia deaths for the workers, and because we haven't declared the workers to be lepers, We let them procreate, and thus they spread their radiation damage into the population at large. You can get just as much genetic deterioration from having all the dose in the workers if they intermarry with the rest of the public. And that little thing is overlooked by the nuclear mafia.
What about people who are not workers but who are in the vicinity of these plants? Is there any danger?
There is danger. When everything is working well in nuclear plants, that level in the vicinity of the plants can be exceedingly low, exceedingly low. It's when everything isn't working perfectly. At Harrisburg, everything isn't working perfectly.
Well, let's take a plant where everything appears to be working well. And I'm not sure what examples to use, but take a plant where there haven't been any reported leakages. Mm-hmm. In that type of a plant, are the people in the surrounding area in any type of danger of radiation exposure that would create genetic problems or other problems?
Part of the answer to that is, you know who tells you what the exposure is? They do, the people who operate the plant. This is the fox telling the hens how well he's protecting them. And let me give you an illustration. In 1969, there was a fire at the Rocky Flats plant. It's not a nuclear power plant, but it manufactures and handles plutonium for weapons work. Somebody asked, how much plutonium have you released to the off-site area around Rocky Flats? The answer from the AEC and Dow Chemical, 1 milligram. Dr. Edward Martell went out and measured the plutonium and said it was 100 to 200 grams. In other words, the AEC was off 100,000 to 200,000 times in what they said was released. The AEC said, Dr. Martell is absurd, we'll put our scientists to work on it, and they did, and they got the answers that Dr. Martell got. So when they're off by 100,000 times in what they tell you they're releasing, I honestly don't know what to answer your question about the safety of people in the vicinity, because I know they lie like carpets about their releases.
But that leads me to one of the other areas that I wanted to get into. Your testimony is extremely disturbing, as I'm sure it's intended
to be. I hope it is.
With regard to the harassment of scientists who come up with independent information in this area.
I'm amazed that you haven't heard of it before. It's a well-known phenomenon. I even wrote 2 books about it.
Well, what I'd like to get into just for a moment or two, and I know that the chairman wants to move along, but because of what I consider to be the extraordinary importance of this aspect of your testimony, I'd appreciate it if you'd spend a moment or two speculating as to why this happened.
Part of it is a bureaucracy like AEC, or now the Department of Energy, that gets up to $3 billion and has made promises of the great promise of the atom. They've gone out so far they don't know how to turn back. The other thing is that, you know, if you keep lying long enough, you begin to believe your own lies. And I wouldn't be surprised that some of the people in the atomic establishment even believe what they're saying. I mean, that's possible. I know a lot of them don't believe it. They're just saying it. But once you've got your bureaucracy established with momentum, can you imagine what would happen if the Department of Energy said, look, we made a mistake. It was a foolish decision. We've been deceiving the Congress all along about the health and safety aspects. Let's quit. That bureaucracy isn't going to do that. That's one of the things. The other, sir, is there's $50 billion on the line in various plants. And incidentally, terrible for our economy, the worst thing for jobs. But when $50 billion are on the line, they'll fight to your last breath to earn a profit on it.
Senator Campbell.
Senator, I just wanted to ask one other question. If I understood your testimony correctly with regard to the number of cancer deaths at the level of 100 millirems a year, I thought that you testified that there would be 20 to 40,000 cancer deaths.
No, that's 170. Oh, it's 100 millirems, 20 to 40,000. You're correct.
How does one arrive at that figure?
That comes, unfortunately, we have the corpses, unfortunately.
How do you attribute the number of deaths to the number of millirems?
I say, we have the corpses from a variety of studies. One of them are some British people who are irradiated. Another is some women who got fluoroscopy radiation for when they were being treated for tuberculosis. Another are some children who were irradiated in the head for ringworm and scalp and got a dose to their thyroid. The people in Hiroshima and Nagasaki. Now we have the number from the Hanford workers, and we can get a number of so many cancers per REM from those data. Now, the statement that that doesn't hold down at low doses is hogwash. The reason it's hogwash is that Dr. Alice Stewart showed 20 years ago that down at those lowest doses, from 3/10 of a REM to 1.5 REMs, there's direct proportionality between cancer and leukemia in the children and the dose in the mother. So it isn't true that we don't have evidence at low doses, and I think reports like Linscare are just ridiculous.
Let me ask one final question. Are there any nuclear critics in the scientific community who are still being supported by federal funds and who are allowed to express freely this nuclear criticism that they may have arrived at through their own research?
It's a little better, you know, and now you don't get your head chopped off if you mention the word cancer. You probably could say cancer and you won't lose your job if you're in being supported. But the record is very, very bad right up through the Mancuso fiasco. And I expect it to continue. You just don't tell the truth. You know, I really was in love with my cancer research at the Lawrence Livermore Lab. I put 7 years of my life into it. And it was just getting to a point where it was very, this was a lab program. And the AEC said, we've got to punish Goffman if either the Lawrence Lab takes away his $250,000 a year for his cancer program, or will take $250,000 away from the lab. The reason was, to their credit, at the Livermore Lab, they said, because John Goffman criticizes the radiation standards doesn't mean his cancer work is bad, and we're not going to cut his funds off. And I credit the Dr. May and Dr. Batesel for a very forthright stand at that time on that issue. So I personally canceled my research program. I would much prefer to be in the laboratory working on the cancer, but there is no way to get funds and be honest.
Thank you.
Senator Campbell?
Doctor, we're not going to accuse you of being wishy-washy on the issue.
Thank you.
I
always think it's better to call a spade a spade. I use Gina Lola Bridget's advice, that I never lie, it's too hard to remember them.
That's a good point. Dr. Goffman, you were at Livermore Laboratory, right?
Yes.
Do you honestly or do you personally believe that, and I'm sure your credentials are impeccable and I commend you for them, are there other people at Livermore who have your background, your credentials, who, not for economic considerations, but for philosophical considerations or scientific considerations, would disagree with you?
I'm not aware of anyone currently on the staff of the Livermore Lab that challenges any of my values in concerning the cancer hazard of radiation. By the way, I happen to be a supporter of the Livermore Lab because though I oppose nuclear power, until and unless all countries get rid of nuclear weapons, I support the U.S. nuclear weapons effort.
Your concern mostly with the radiation and its relationship to and its incidence to cancer.
Cancer, leukemia, and genetic injury in future generations.
Okay. Let's talk about
the deaths from doses of radiation are just... See, pretty soon we're going to have the large dose problem because the nuclear industry says, look, we haven't knocked over a major city yet. And wait, let's give us another chance. And when they really get Philadelphia or Sacramento or San Francisco, then we'll see the deaths in the immediate period.
Okay. Let's talk about a 20-year-old person who lives in Sacramento versus a 20-year-old person who lives in Denver.
Yes.
That person in Denver has, over that 20-year period, accumulated 2,000 more millirems than the person in Sacramento. Is that person then... The potential for him to have genetic or pass on genetic problems in Denver greater than the one who lives in Sacramento?
Absolutely.
Should we allow intermarriage between the cities?
I think you ought to think about it. But
how about
people's personal choice?
Right.
If people want to live in Denver, the one thing that's more important to me than nuclear power is liberty and justice. If people want to live in Denver, that's their privilege. But if Big Brother wants to ram nuclear power down our throats, that's different.
Tell me about it, and I'm concerned. I have a sister who's a stewardess with an airline. Her chances, obviously she's receiving higher doses of radiation than the... Is there a higher incidence of cancer in the airline industry than other industries?
I do not know of a study that has been done. It'll be hard to see because those are at such low doses you'd need an enormous population. That's the problem for the direct measurement. But we have every reason to go down and along the lines of the conversation between you and Dr. Heslip along that straight line. If anything, the evidence suggests it may get even worse at the low doses than the straight line would predict.
The I gather some of your concern about the medical community as it relates to some of the things they do. Do you oppose, are you concerned about the utilization of x-rays?
I give scathing talks and I write scathing things about my colleagues for their overuse of x-rays, for their unconcern about taking the steps in the form of changing development time and fast film, which could get the same diagnostic information with one-tenth the dose. But the medical community is waking up. There is now the Physicians for Social Responsibility, highly infiltrated of all places in Harvard University. And I think they're going to do a good job of waking the medical community up. But let me tell you something, Senator. The real problem of medical exposure rests with you in the legislature. You may not realize it, but it does. I talked to the orthodontists once about the radiation hazard, and one of the men said at the end, "That's an interesting talk, but useless." And I said, "Well, that's an interesting comment. Tell me why." He said, "Look, when I have a patient, I'm going to take every x-ray I can think of, whether I need it or not, because every patient is a potential malpractice case. If I walk into a courtroom, the opposing attorney is going to say, 'Show me the x-rays.' And if I say I didn't take them because I didn't think I needed them and therefore wanted to protect the patient, it'll be a res ipsa loquitur decision against me. And you've got to deal with that in the legislature to stop that nonsense of malpractice suits, because that is why doctors are taking more x-rays. It's defensive medicine against malpractice."
Yeah. Certainly agree with you on that. Thank you.
Senator Keene has a question.
Yes. Last year, we heard from... may I get a light, please?
Excellent.
Yeah. Last year, we heard from reputable scientists that the prospects of harm from nuclear were so minute as to be insignificant. Tonight, we're hearing from you that the continued operation of existing plants is probably disastrous. Why are you more credible than they?
I don't get any pay for what I do, let me tell you that.
How many books have you sold?
How many books have I sold? Well, let's talk about that. My total income over 9 years from the books I wrote has been $7,000. I probably got approximately $1.50 an hour for my work on my books.
You deserve more than that.
I'll tell you something. I'm
you're below minimum wage.
I'm not a bad consultant, and I get $50 an hour for being an expert witness in lawsuits, so that writing books against nuclear power is the worst conceivable way I can spend my time. But I don't think...
Okay.
That I ought to be trying to convince you about who to believe after Harrisburg, after all those assurances that Harrisburg's couldn't happen and did happen, and to have that parade of Metropolitan Edison and Nuclear Regulatory Commission officials contradicting themselves every day on what the findings were. I think it's absurd to ask who to believe.
Mm-hmm. I don't think it's absurd.
I didn't mean it in the...
No, that's okay. That's okay. I'm impressed by your scientific credentials, but also some of the theatrics. And I want you to know that I agree with you, and I agree with your conclusions. I'm not sure I agree with how you get there and how you present your case. Troubles me a little bit, and I think it troubles some of the other people.
Fine.
Why don't you
invite me back here and get all those scientists on the other side and keep us here for 5 days to put the evidence on the table and argue it out? I want to say something
we
about...
We did it last year.
Oh, you didn't invite
hours.
Me.
Well, we should have had you.
Well, you should have. That's right. Let me say something further about my theatrics. You know, I'm not a cold fish. I have some feeling for humans, and as a scientist concerning public health matters, I don't apologize one bit for my theatrics of concern over the public health.
No, but let me ask you a question. You enjoy the phrase nuclear mafia. We have a high incidence of risk with other human activities, some of which are commercially exploited. Mm-hmm. We have people who die in automobiles. We have people who die in airplanes. We don't talk about an airline mafia or an automotive mafia.
Well, we ought to talk about the automotive mafia, but that's
maybe
a separate
we should.
Question.
Maybe we should.
The oil company, for you to give me a clean bill of health on the oil industry is a surprise in my life.
No, that's not what I'm saying, but everybody who came here tonight drove here. Nobody took public transportation.
True.
Okay.
I would like to say that I have had grave difficulty in the past 6 months trying to think through the risk versus benefit situation. I don't have an answer for you because I'm having trouble thinking it through. Some of the things I'm clear on, if you're going to talk about risks versus benefits, first of all, Big Brother shouldn't make the decision. Mm-hmm. The Nuclear Regulatory Commission has got no right to issue licenses to commit murder. Mm-hmm. They have no right. Therefore, they shouldn't be making that risk-benefit decision, and they are making it. Now, I think if you're going to go the risk-benefit way, you've got to understand something. You know the song Short People? You don't listen to the rock scene. Well, supposing...
I read your books.
Supposing somebody decided, about short people, we ought to get rid of them. We could say that the benefit is that the rest of us won't be troubled by short people. Let's execute all short people. Where does this stop? When you've applied the risk-benefit equation beyond the first person that you say you'll put at risk, it could stop anywhere. Nazi Germany taught us what using the risk-benefit thing. It was regarded for the good of the state to exterminate certain people, and you know where that ended. So this is one of the most grave decisions, but I still say I do not see any reason why any governmental agency can violate the Constitution of the United States, which declares you shall not take the life of anyone without due process of law.
Okay. Thank you, Dr. Goff.
I think we'd better move on here. I want to thank the witnesses. Do you have any further comments?
I have a lot I'd like to make, but in interest of time, no.
We may very well provide another opportunity. We are dealing with health risks and health analysis, and I think that we may very well come back to this in further hearings of this committee. Thank you very much.
I'm going to bring them all up and then take them one by one.